Welcome to the IDC podcast. The IDC promotes independent research on antitrust and competition law and policy issues, being also the point of contact between all those who have a special interest in the area, both in Latin America and globally. At a time when the consumer welfare standard seems to be under attack in the competition law and policy world, Asimakis Kalminos contributes to the debate with an article on how the case law of the Court of Justice of the European Union has spewed that standard over the years. While the Europeans observed the heated discussions in the US, Kalminos asks himself, first, if the Europeans are embracing a wrong dogma that has fallen out of favor in its birthplace, and second, if this latest embracement of consumer welfare by the EU court is an anachronism. Kalminos says the increasing references to consumer welfare, which is a relatively recent phenomenon, have to be seen in the context of the EU case law becoming less formalistic and more attuned to economics and to developing clear theories of harm, which are based on effects as opposed to form. Our speaker today, Makis Kalminos, is a partner at the Brussels office of White & Case. He has acted or been part of a number of landmark cases before the European courts and the European Commission, as well as national competition authorities, national courts, and arbitration tribunals. Makis was a commissioner and member of the board of the Hellenic Competition Commission between 2009 and 2011. He is currently a visiting fellow of the Center for Law and Governance in Europe at UCL, the University College London, and a member of the Executive Committee of the Global Competition Law Center at the College of Europe. He's a prolific writer on legal matters and often gives speeches and seminars on EU law. He's also an NGA to the International Competition Network, the ICN, and a member of the International Advisory Board of the IDC. Okay, well, Makis, thanks again for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you here, an old friend from the IDC. Let me shoot, before you introduce your paper, let me shoot with a question. Are you in Europe suffering from a sort of a tyranny of consumer welfare?
Hi, Pablo. Thanks again for the invitation. It's a pleasure to speak to you and to our audience. The short answer is no. We don't have this tyranny, let's say, to the extent one can speak of a tyranny of the consumer welfare test. Just to be clear, I don't believe that there is a tyranny of the consumer welfare test, generally speaking. But let's say if we were to assume, it's just an assumption, let's say, that there is maybe in the US a sort of excessive reliance on consumer welfare and the consumer welfare standard, have we had such a thing in Europe? And the answer is no. In Europe, we have never had, the consumer welfare standard has never played the role that it has played in the US. In fact, the references to consumer welfare as an ultimate goal of the EU competition rules started, I would say, in the late 90s, initially by the Commission, and then they were picked up gradually by the EU courts. And I can explain to you a bit later why I think it's a good development, and there's nothing really to think that we have a problem. We have no problem at all. It's a positive development, in my view.
That's great. Before we get into the details of your paper, and you've mentioned the US, obviously we all know that there has been a huge discussion going on in the US, but without obviously getting into the details of the US discussion, because we are more interested today to hear from Europe. But I mean, As an observer, what I see is what we see from here is that some years ago we were talking about high hipster antitrust and some comments that were maybe not the best comments or concepts to use when you had different opinions. Now we're talking more about New Brandeisians or some sort of similar concept that I think the discussion in the US is sort of calming down, or do you think it's still very very different views that cannot get an agreement on what they really think should be the standard in the US? Why I'm saying this, I remember, and you participated in a task force and a paper that we published at the ABA antitrust section on should we retain, reform, or restore the consumer welfare standard in the US. And I remember very well your comments there. But as you said, but as you saw at that time in 2020, I think the discussion was very, very acid in a certain way. And now I think maybe things are getting calmer or getting down. Do you see it similarly, or you think there's still a huge path to go in the US to get a consensus there on this regard?
Well, I mean, first of all, I'm not, I'm just an external observer. I don't believe myself these developments in the US, but I'm a well-informed, external observer. What I see over the last few months, years, is on the one hand, you have, of course, the extremists, what we would call back in those days the hipsters. You have the extremists for whom... they think that we should go back to the original intent of the statute. This was about democracy. It was about protecting the small guys vis-a-vis the big guys, and so on. And then the whole competition law enforcement has been hijacked by the conservatives, by the Republican kind of ideologists, which were based in Chicago and all that. So you have this extremist kind of approach, which is like consumer welfare standard is a conspiracy, right? And then you have other types of voices. What I find, however, interesting is that all this critique, all this extreme critique of the consumer welfare standard has produced some results, in the sense that even now the more kind of mainstream economists and the more mainstream thinkers, in competition law in the US, they believe that, the purest consumer welfare standard, the very orthodox consumer welfare standard, in the sense of you want to look at short-term price effects, etc., is no longer the, it should not really be followed, and consumer welfare means something broader than that, and therefore we need to have an open mind, and we need to look at other ways to measure, for example, consumer harm and so on. Of course, grounded on economics, on effects, etc. So this is essentially the mainstream, what we would call the mainstream, has been influenced a bit by this extremist, approach. And in the same way, like, for example, communism in the old days changed capitalism, right? So, I think we are seeing something similar here, in the sense that there is a bit of an influence. The mainstream camp is changing a bit, is nuancing a bit its positions with regard to what the standard should be. That, again, about the US.
Great. I mean, it's very clear, and you've mentioned that in your paper, and we will get into the details as we speak, but you mentioned the influence of some US, very well-trained lawyers or academics on how the Commission, the European Commission, started with this sort of approach of consumer welfare in Europe. But before getting out, I mean, you were very clear, there has never been a tyranny, the so-called tyranny of the consumer welfare concept in Europe, but I mean, in what sense, and as we get into your paper, in what sense do you think that this principle has been welcome in Europe and brought some sort of, let's say, discipline or intellectual rigor on to competition enforcement in the EU?
Right. I mean, in Europe, we have never had the same way to look at consumer welfare, like just being about short-term price effects. I mean, that's clear. I mean, we've never looked at consumer welfare in that sense. Very early on, there are references to quality, innovation, choice. There are references, of course, to the single market imperative. You know, it's not, there's a single market that, that competition rules must protect, etc. There's the competitive process, you know. The focus is on the competitive process and not so much on the final kind of effects on the pocket of consumers, right? So that is clear. I mean, this is the European school at the end of the day, if you like, of competition law. Then another thing which is important is that the way we look at consumers, I mean, it's not like in the US, but we look at intermediaries also. So, you know, the term consumer includes not just end users, but also intermediaries, which is an important thing to keep in mind. But still, over the years, there are more and more references to consumer welfare, right, as being the objective of the competition rules. This is not an old phenomenon. This is a relatively recent phenomenon. It started at the end of the 90s with a lot of influence coming from US trained lawyers, which were kind of fed up with the way the EU antitrust rules were enforced back in the 80s and the early 90s, very formalistic. So, you know, it started with the vertical restraints kind of reform at towards the end of the 90s. Then we had the modernization, and then at the beginning of 2000s, we started thinking about Article 102 and the reform of Article 102. And of course, we had the merger regulation already, which was heavily based on economics and theories of harm and all that. So all this, you know, we had a kind of slow gestation procedure at the Commission, at the European Commission level. Initially, there was a resistance by the EU courts to kind of buy into that concept. As I explained in my paper, we had some kind of timid first references to consumer welfare, consumer harm, these kind of notions, some very timid references initially in the case law. And it is only over the last 10 years, I would say, that the case law has really espoused the notion of consumer welfare as being an objective of the EU competition rules. And we actually have many cases recently which specifically say that the consumer welfare is the ultimate objective of EU competition law. There is a but. Yes, they say that, and this is really astonishing if you compare to the situation before. But at the same time, I think that what the EU courts are saying about consumer welfare is a bit more abstract. They are kind of putting it as a broader abstract principle, let's say. And they're not using the consumer welfare standard as a kind of operational test, as a kind of daily standard of enforcement, as a test, a legal test or an economic test in cases. That's not how the courts are seeing consumer welfare. They see it more at a more abstract level. And essentially what the EU courts are saying is that, you know, it's not the purpose of the competition rules to protect competitors as such. Yep. We are here to protect competition, right? And what is competition? Well, competition is lots of things. It has to do with good prices for consumers. It has to do with innovation. It has to do with choice, you know. And that is what, for the EU courts, is consumer welfare.
I mean, I think if I try to put it what you've just said in, let's say, in a tweet for Twitter, would I be right if I say in the middle of the 90s, more specifically 1996, with the green paper you've mentioned, the Commission started to put expressly the consumer welfare standard into words on their own documents. In that sense, since then, the Commission has been very, quite a sort of clear, maybe until recently. Then there was some, as you've said, also timid evolution on the case law in the courts in Europe. And maybe more recently, I wouldn't say falling in love, but something similar. But in that evolution, and I think it's something that you've also get into the details and in-depth analysis on the AGs part of this story, Cocotte, Val, and just a minor comment, the opinions of the AGs are opinions that, talking from South America, Latin America, from Argentina specifically, those are documents that we definitely take a look at. And talking maybe as a former commissioner, we did analyze those documents. Although they were not decisions, they were very non-binding, important, substantial decisions for us. And I think that you've raised the point here that the AGs also started to push this on the EU courts. Can you make a comment on that, if that's right, my understanding is right?
Yes, I mean, as for those that are familiar with the EU system, I mean, in the courts, we have two courts. We have the General Court, which reviews Commission decisions, and then we have the Supreme Court, let's say, which is the Court of Justice of the European Union. And therefore, you have cases which start at the General Court, then they are appealed to the Court of Justice, or you have cases which come from the member states directly to the Court of Justice. That's how cases are heard before the Court of Justice. So you have two kinds of routes, let's say, to the Court of Justice. One is direct actions, commission decisions, essentially, which are appealed. And then the other one is preliminary reference cases, which come from the member states court, and they ask the Court of Justice to give answers to specific questions. So the Court of Justice is playing a very important role, more important in my view for competition law in Europe than the Supreme Court in the US, but it hears more cases, obviously. And in the Court of Justice, we have a person which is called the Advocate General. The Advocate General is something which echoes the French system. It is a feature of our system since the very beginning. The Advocate General is a member of the court, but is not a judge. Is not one of the judges, but is a member of the court, which issues an opinion. An opinion is a proposal, let's say, to the Court of Justice to respond in a specific way in the case in front of them. And these opinions are sometimes written in a very discursive style. Each Advocate General has their own style. For example, I remember one Advocate General that started with references to ancient Greek poetry, Homer, and there are others who have their own style. Certainly, among the more recent Advocate Generals, Advocate General Cocotte, the German Advocate General, has had a lot of influence. She belongs to a school which is the more interventionist school. I mean, the more kind of strict approach of the EU competition law, the more kind of let's say ordo liberal in a way. Then you had recently you had Advocate General Wall, the Swedish Advocate General, which was, I think, clearly the most open Advocate General to economics, to effects based, to kind of what one could call the the reform, let's say, of EU competition law, and he has been very much in the center of the consumer welfare discussion, but also reinterpreting many judgments of the past and producing new capital which is more open to economics. Now, Advocate General Val is no longer an Advocate General, he's a judge now in the Court of Justice, but certainly his influence was paramount. There are now, there's a Greek Advocate General, Advocate General Randos, who has also taken extremely important and interesting positions in his opinions, also following the path of Advocate General Val. And there are some other Advocate Generals which are quite, let's say, interested in competition law. One is Advocate General Pietro Cella, the former president of the Italian Competition Authority. You have Advocate General Emiliou from Cyprus. And I don't want to kind of continue with names because I don't want to...
Yes, I mean, I think the point is very clear, but my main interest here is if you've seen sort of a parallel evolution on this issue of the, let's call it consumer welfare standard or whatever, however you can call it in Europe. But I mean, was it the evolution similar from the point of view of the AGs than that of the courts, or do you think there was more pushing through? I think you've said something like in those lines that the AGs mainly, I don't know, Kokot and British Airways, Val in the Latvian cases, and in many other cases, Skanska and Rantos that you mentioned more recently. Do you think they have been showing the North to the European courts, and how did the courts reacted? You went through that analysis in your paper. I would like to listen to your view on the case. And obviously not all of them, but I mean, until Intel, Google Shopping, there are a lot of cases in which this was discussed in the cases. And I think the views of the AGs were not always the same as that was finally the opinion of the courts.
Yes, I mean, clearly the Advocate General have played a role in forming the views of the court. Of course, you know, there is a limitation, and at the end of the day, they are only an advocate. They are just an Advocate General, and it's just an opinion, right?
There are non-binding opinions.
It's not. It doesn't. It's just an opinion which may be read in conjunction with the judgment. Sometimes you need to kind of see the opinion as a whole with the judgment, because the judgment may, for example, be not very wordy. It agrees with the Advocate General, but there's not much in it. And then in that case, it's best to go to the Advocate General's opinion to understand maybe what the court has said. But there are other cases where the court is not really following, at the end of the day, the Advocate General so much. Or there is a dialogue, let's say, between the Advocate General and the court. There is a disagreement. And then the final, let's say, decision in that dialogue is postponed, and you know, it reappears in a different case after a couple of years, for example. Just to give you an example, we have had very recently a case called Servizio Elettrico Nazionale. It's an Italian preliminary reference where Advocate General Randos, for example, took a very I would say very far-reaching opinion, very kind of pro-economics opinion in favor of effects when it comes to Article 102 and abuse of dominance. Really, really very economic-oriented, one of the best opinions ever. The court did not really follow on everything the Advocate General. The court wanted to kind of mimic in a way the Advocate General and produce a, let's say, a restatement of the law on Article 102, but I don't think it was very successful, to be honest. I think
the court of Orantos the court.
No, I think the judgment was not very successful. Randos is very, I mean, it's a very consistent opinion. You may disagree or agree with it, but it's very consistent. It's clear what Randos is saying. What the court
in that case, sorry to interrupt you. In that case, Randos, what he said basically, and correct me again, he said in his position that was that protecting the structure of competition cannot be an objective alternative to consumer welfare. Was that the case?
Yes, he said that at the end of the day, it's consumer welfare. I mean, the structure, what does it mean? I mean, at the end of the day, you're still asking yourself, okay, I can see protecting competitive structure, but what does it really mean? I mean, what's the ultimate objective? And he said, in reality, it's just consumer welfare. Although, you know, he too, I don't think he saw consumer welfare in the way that an orthodox Chicago economist would see it, but still. And then the court came and was a bit more kind of indecisive, trying to say on the one hand, on the other hand, on the one hand, on the other hand. So it's not very... So there was this dialogue, however, between the Advocate General and the Court of Justice. Now, in that particular case, this did not go very well, let's say, this dialogue. But this dialogue may have helped the Court of Justice to take another judgment, to adopt another judgment at the beginning of this year. This is the Unilever Italia case, which is really, in my view, implying that, you know, maybe Advocate General Randos's opinion in the previous case is not that bad at the end of the day, and maybe this is what, which is the ultimate winner here, essentially. So, you know, these kind of dialogues exist and sometimes influence the case law, not necessarily in that specific case, but in a case in the future. In any event, Pablo, I mean, it's clear now that the Court of Justice is considering that the consumer welfare is the ultimate objective of the competition rules. I think this is very important because, you know, this is as a matter of interpretation of the treaty itself. So, you know, if the Court of Justice says that, you know, that's it. The Commission cannot say otherwise. These references, however, have to be seen in the context of a more abstract principle, let's say, which is that, you know, we are here to protect the competition, not specific competitors. Mm-hmm. And also we are here to really, you know, focus on effects, not on the form of conduct. So it's against formalism. It's more in favor of an effects-based analysis. And also, it's like the court saying, you know, show me the theory of harm. I want to see what's the theory of harm here. Mm. The theory of consumer harm at the end of the day, right? So this is quite an important element that we must always have in mind, that the consumer welfare principle, as mentioned by the court, is more, at the end of the day, a more kind of abstract principle, which is there to remind us that this is not about formalism, this is about effects, this is about concrete theories of harm, this is about, at the end of the day, explaining based on evidence why certain conduct produces consumer harm.
So if we had a chance of looking at the future, how do you think the evolution might be in Europe, as you've said, with the AG's opinions and the cases resolved by the Court of Justice or the courts in Europe? Randos may have been very clear and maybe went far or further away than what the court, as you said, as of today, has gone. But I mean, Randos went through saying it's consumer welfare, I think he put it more or less in these words, it's more central than the process of competition. And the court says, yes, or but no. I mean, we are still in Europe, and correct me again, the rules are for the protection of competition and consumer welfare. Do you think they will continue with the standards going hand in hand together, or do you think they go back to the more sort of the process of competition, more formalistic, or would they go directly to a sort of a consumer welfare standard that is in discussion right now in other countries such as the US?
The Court of Justice has very specifically said, and again, it's remarkable, one would not expect that a few years ago, that consumer welfare is the ultimate objective of the competition rule. That's what the Court of Justice has said in Servizio Elettrico Nazionale. Mm. Of course, there's a comma there, and then they say comma, which means that we need to have an effective competitive structure. That's why I say this judgment is a bit on the one hand, on the other hand, right? So, but what this means in reality is that, okay, the ultimate objective is consumer welfare. Now, a good proxy, I think that's how I would interpret the court's judgment, a good proxy of that objective is, you know, to make sure that we have an effective competitive structure. But, you know, an effective competitive structure doesn't mean in reality to have a structure a market structure where you have competitors, a number of specific competitors. That's not why we enforce the competition rules, right? We enforce the competition rules because we want to ensure that consumers, in the broad sense, are better off. They are better off in terms of prices, innovation, product choice, and so on. So, you know, I think the court is saying, yes, it's consumer welfare. Of course, what we have said in the past about effective competitive structure, it's important, but it's one and the same thing at the end of the day. Right. And I think that's a good way of seeing things in the EU, because, you know, there are some other scholars or commentators who are saying, no, it's really either one or the other, and it should not be consumer welfare, it should be the rivalry process. That's it. But, you know, that's not what the court is saying. The court is saying all these objectives, consumer welfare being the ultimate objective, but then, you know, a good proxy of that is competitive process. All of these objectives are one thing at the end of the day. And this means that we protect competition. We don't protect competitors, we protect competition. Of course, in order to have competition, you need competitors, but it's not the ultimate objective, you know, to ensure that a specific number of competitors exists in a particular market. That's not why we have these provisions there.
I think that was very clear in the Intel case, no? With all its ups and downs on the as effective competitors test and that competition law is not only about price, but it's also about choice, quality, innovation, as you said. So, Magis, I think we more or less covered. I will invite all the audience to read your paper, which has a lot of details on not only the cases, but also the Advocate General's opinions and the evolution in the Commission. And I think it's also very interesting to see how things are developing in Europe, not exactly the same as they have done in the US. And as you said in your paper, quite paradoxically, consumer welfare, it's under persecution in the US and has found some sort of refuge in Europe. So we'll see what happens in the future. Anything else you want to add on the objective or the thesis of your paper?
Well, the paper was written before. You may have seen also, and I'm sure those that are following the EU developments know that at the end of March, we had the Commission revisiting the guidance paper on Article 102, and now they have tried to be a bit more kind of, I wouldn't say formalistic, but you know, they are essentially implying that we may have gone too far with all this economic approach, and it's more difficult for authorities and certainly for the Commission to bring some cases. I don't agree with that, but anyway, I mean, that's not the. But all that to say that we are now entering a transitory period, which will be very important in terms of where the Commission will end up with, in terms of guidelines on Article 102. And certainly I will see, I see more and more, let's say, dialogue between the Commission when it comes to, for example, its guidelines, its case law, its decisions, and the Court of Justice when reviewing those decisions, but also when responding to national courts' references. So, you know, stay tuned. That's what I'm saying. Stay tuned. There will be this dialogue. I don't know where we will end up in 5 or 10 years' time, but certainly this is an area of law where a lot is happening, and these are times which are really, really interesting. And certainly it's a pleasure for you and I, and let's say, so to say, the experts to look at and participate also in that dialogue, because, you know, after all, we are all it's a community of competition law, and you know, this is all interesting for all of us.
Absolutely. We've seen the discussion in the US during the last years, maybe 5-10 years. Some thought there would be material changes in the current administration, and we also see that it's not that easy. I mean, the agencies, FTC, DOJ, in the case of the US, might try to push it, but they also depend on the justice, on the judiciary mainly. Something similar in that sense, as you've just mentioned, is happening in Europe. Nothing very different will happen in Latin America. We've seen some sort of discussions going on right now in many countries, like, I don't know, Brazil, Chile, Colombia, and some other countries in Latin America. So, as you've said, I think it's a very interesting moment for those experts, as you and your colleagues there, not us. We're not experts here. We're trying to learn. So, as always, Marcus, it's been a pleasure not only to chat but also to learn from your wisdom on this area. So thank you very much again for joining us in this conversation, and let's stay tuned to see what the evolution is in Europe.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Pablo, and we'll be in touch, obviously.
Take care. Thank you very much.
Thank you.